do you think about your future and the future of your generation? Because you lost the last semester, right? This is your senior year. You're going to be applying to colleges. There's no, I mean, we don't know when this thing will be over. What do you think you've lost as a generation, Gen Z? And what do you think you've gained?
I feel like we gained some more independence, because it's basically become, you have to teach yourself, because eventually no one's going to teach you. With all this online stuff, it's, you got to do it yourself. You got to learn. You got to adapt.
Well, Natalie, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you.
And enlightening our audience. And folks, thank you so much for listening to Generation Now. I'm Troy McDonald. Until next time, bye, everybody.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jeff Rasmussen, a retired Racine Unified teacher and administrator who currently serves as president of the Racine Area Retired Educators Association, Steve Brown, a retired professor of education leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Manji. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Welcome to Education Matters. My name is Troy McDonald, and today we are going to be revisiting an episode that originally aired on September 26th, where we talked to individuals and families from the Racine Unified School District who were adapting to virtual learning. It was announced this week on WGTD.org that Racine Unified will be going virtual indefinitely for the foreseeable future. So we are revisiting this episode from September 26th. Please welcome Stephen Kalmar, Eugene Woodell, Kathy Duenas, and Phil Belangi to the program. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
Great. So let's start with you, Stephen. Tell us how old your kid is, what school they go to, and we'll go around the horn.
Oh, okay, thanks. Appreciate the opportunity. And my daughter is a fifth grader at Jefferson Lighthouse. And I have to add to this that my 20-year-old son was at UW-Madison until things fell apart. And he has been and continues at home virtually going to college.
Wow. Wow. Eugene, how about you? Oh, we might have lost Eugene here. Let's move on to Kathy. Kathy.
Hi. I have a kindergartner, sorry. His name's Cal. So this is his third year. He was at Red Apple for 3K, 4K, and then now he's doing kindergarten. So he's been at home with me since March. So it's different.
Yeah. Phil, what about you?
I have a second grader, kindergartner, and 4K student, all at Gifford Elementary, well, Gifford, I guess, K-8 school here in Racine.
Wow. And Eugene, what about you? Where does your child attend school?
I have two daughters at Red Apple Elementary as well, a fourth and fifth grade student.
Wow. So your hands are full. Like, that's a lot. So I'm going to toss this out to anyone who wants to pick it up. When you first heard about COVID-19, this new disease, what did you think?
I was shocked.
I guess my first thought was I didn't think about what was going to happen to school at first. I worked for the Department of Children and Families, so we've been involved on the ground level. I've done COVID tracing, and immediately we went to virtual work. So I guess my first thought was, what is work going to look like? And I kind of forgot to think about what's school going to add to that.
So for me, I work for an educational technology company, and prior to November of last year, I'd been on the road like 3 to 4 days a week. But November I had switched and I was home a lot more, which has turned out really well as far as not thinking, okay, what is this going to look like? I'm home. My kids are home. My wife is home. I was used to being home by myself. And now work exploded. Obviously, educational technology, everyone is using it and needing it now. And then too, just thinking personally, okay, well, this vacation is not going to happen. What is summer going to look like? So it's just kind of, as it is today, a big ball of just unknown.
When I first learned about it, I was very cautious. We were planning to go to Florida, me and my family. And, you know, there was the whole toilet paper shortage. Then there's the disinfectant wipe shortage. And so our life just kind of froze. We just really had to evaluate, okay, what's important? What's not important? What do we need to do for the kids? Because we don't want to, me and my husband don't want to freak out because they can't, my kids can't control anything. So we almost had to take a step back and look at what do we need to do first. And so it was kind of mind-boggling how much we were right before COVID, what we were doing as a family. You know, we're always going places, we're always together, let's go adventure here, there, and we kind of had to take a step back and really think what's more important right now. So yeah, we were taken back.
Eugene.
I guess when it first started, it was kind of a surprise and a lot scarier, I think, than it is now. Not that it's not scary now, but I'm glad that we at least have some information on how it's transmitted, this and that. But our family is also ones to do stuff, not necessarily vacations, but constantly outdoors, play dates, going to the park, going to the beach. Granted, that wasn't an issue back in March, but as the summer started, yeah, it really stunk for the kids because, you know, they can't go play with their friends. We have slowly branched out and have done more activities at a safe distance with our friends. But yeah, it was scary there for a little while. At the end of March through April into the beginning of May, I was laid off work. So that was not a fun time for our family. We made it through just fine. My wife is very financially sound. So we made it through okay. Other friends and family have not been as lucky, but it's been a scary time. And I think it's been said already, but a lot of time for reflection, a lot of time for family to come together. And we are closer, I think. Granted, we all have a little bit of cabin fever at the same time, but it's not all bad. So we're making the best of the situation and just getting by like everyone else.
Wow, that is so profound. And thank you for sharing that. Now, I had a conversation with my mom, and people who've listened to my other shows on this network know that I talk about my mom. I love my mom. But she had me when she was 41 years old, all the way back in like 1992. And that was before like Madonna and all these people were having kids in like their 50s, right? So it was like a big ordeal for my mom. But she told me when this all broke down, she said, Troy, I don't know how I would have sat you down and explained what was going on and explained to you what your world shifted to overnight. So I'm curious, and I'll start with Kathy. What was that first conversation like with your family about saying, hey, your world has changed? How did they receive it? And what was that conversation like?
It was definitely challenging. Because I take my son everywhere with me, him and my daughter, who's about to turn 3 tomorrow. And we go to the grocery store. We go to the post office. We go everywhere together just because I love teaching them things. And for them to just suddenly stop, the best way was to say, you know, people are sick. That's why they have the mask, to keep us safe and to keep you safe. It was hard, though, because he can't visually see a lot of people sick. You know, I mean, I'm not sick often. No one in his family is sick. So to kind of let him know that concept at being, he just turned 5 in April, early April. So it's hard. My 3-year-old daughter, she just wants to do everything. just, I mean, repetition, just telling them, hey, we can't do this when we drive past playgrounds and, you know, they had the hazardous tape up. Hey, nope, not today, sorry. And I feel that I'm very structured, but also some sense carefree. So when we see a good opportunity, we'll take it, we'll go to the playground. Like, yeah, we got a couple extra minutes, let's go have fun. But it was very like disheartening just to tell the kids, no, we got to go home. We got to do this. And I mean, we're financially stable. We ended up just buying a little playground for them to play on in our backyard. I mean, it's not much of a backyard, but it's something. And I just think about those families who don't have as much as we have and who, you know, it's just too bad. So yeah, just teaching them that, hey, people are sick right now. That's why people wear a mask and that's why we can't go outside, but they're definitely bottled up. They're ready to go straight in the morning at 6 a.m. They're ready to scream and yell and ready to have some fun. And so we've been taking lots of walks. That's the best thing for them right now, unfortunately.
Kathy, you bring up something that is so profound. I can't even imagine. Imagine being 5 or 8 years old and looking at a playground and seeing hazardous tape up in your neighborhood. And like you said, explaining to your kids when you're not sick, that other people are sick. I mean, I can't even imagine the disconnect and how hard, and like you said, repetition, saying it over and over again. Stefan, I'm gonna go to you, the same question. What was that conversation like? And you mentioned earlier, you have a 20-year-old. As we know, I'm a millennial, your son's Gen Z. We're kind of hard-headed as well, too. So talk about your conversation, I guess, with both of your kids on those kind of different spectrums and how they received it.
There's a lot to unpack there, but basically, because I work for DCF and my responsibility is in the area of childcare, so one of my initial responsibilities was involved in trying to find childcare for essential workers and what does childcare look like and how are we going to pay for it. And my daughter, who will be 10 this week, we're very politically and involved in the community. So we couldn't, I did chess club at her school. I'm her soccer coach. So we had all of these activities and everything just came to a stop. And it wasn't like, you know, we were just waiting for the next activity to happen. There was just nothing. And then there after nothing, there was more nothing. And as far as the illness part of it, I was recruited as a COVID tracer in the very beginning. So my daughter and I sat down and I went over with her, you know, what I was doing and how I was reaching out to people and how it was affecting people. And I'm older and she was concerned that I would be seriously affected if I got COVID. So we really...
This is your 10-year-old daughter, right, who's saying, Dad, I'm worried about you. Wow. Wow.
Yep. And she's been very vocal about that. Up until that point, she was very excited about the possibility of homeschooling. But since I've been her teacher, she's walked that back and is no longer interested in homeschooling. So at our house here, we have what we call weekly meetings. So it's an opportunity for us and the kids for me and the kids to get together and share what's going on. And we did have a lot of difficult conversations about what would happen to me, you know, what would happen to them? What would the nuts and bolts of things look like if I was no longer able to, function and be in charge with the family? And my son, who was at Madison at the time, hard-headed, I don't know if it was hard-headed, but he certainly had a much more laissez-faire attitude towards what was going on. But as I said, we're all very politically and community service oriented. So we wondered what was going to happen to the people that we tried to serve who would no longer have the programs working for them. And my son and I had the same conversation, and I mean, it may sound fatalist, but one of the first things I did was I called up a lawyer and I got all of my will and I got everything up to date and put everything in place so that I could show my kids, this is what would happen. We got a plan, you know, we prepare for the worst and hope for the best, I guess.
And I want to follow up. I'm going to go to Phil next, but I want to follow up with that. I can't even imagine at 10 years old having that conversation about the will. I mean, that is a very serious conversation to have. And what was the reception to that when you told her, hey, this is what my plan is?
That's a great question. And like I said, we get together as a family and we talk about how we're feeling and what we're scared about and what's bringing us happiness, etc. And she really didn't, I don't think she really understood the connection at first. What were we talking about? What did this mean? I think that she had anxiety about the unknown, just like the rest of us did. But eventually, you know, I sat down with the kids and I showed them everything and we went through everything. And I had to go and sign the paperwork, social distancing. I stood on the porch of the lawyer's office outside. So it was really surrealistic. And the big thing for my son was realizing that, you know, it's just the three of us. So he would have a huge responsibility. And I think that was real sobering for him, that the roles may actually be reversed. And my daughter felt the same way. She would continue to tell me, you know what, I'm here to take care of you. We're going to take care of each other. And I thought about, you know, what they're going to think 30, 40 years from now, looking back. How does this affect a whole generation of children?
Phil, I'm going to move to you. How is this going to affect your generation of your children and the response to all of this?
Yeah, and it's actually kind of a good segue into what I was thinking, because I was just incredibly impressed with how my three children handled all of this. When this all started going, March, 3, 5, and 7 were the ages. My three-year-old son he was in 3K and it was just whatever. But as far as a 4K and then a first grader at the time, it was just cut off. We took it very, we're still taking it very seriously, but I mean, like, no more playing in the neighborhood with kids just because we don't know where anybody's going, who's been where. Couple neighbors work in healthcare. And I was like, well, I don't know what they're bringing home from hospitals and clinics and wherever else they might be. And if I don't know their parents, I don't know how seriously they're taking it. But get going. There's been bumps along the way, like you would expect. I mean, my wife and I have had bumps along the way too, where it's just like, okay, now it's just time to cry because nothing is like it used to be. And it's just doesn't seem right. But it's impressed me with how well they have done with all of this. Just being like, no, we can't play with our friends right now. And they're like, okay. And even if a friend comes up and they're like, no, we're not doing that right now. Or driving by a playground, like Kathy said, looking at the playground and saying there's caution tape on it. They walk by and say, well, we can't play on that right now because of coronavirus. Or, oh, we can't do that because of COVID and we don't want to get sick. We were able to link it, kind of the seriousness of it. My wife has two grandparents that they've both battled cancer and surgeries and everything else, and they're in their 80s. What would happen to them? Both of my wife's parents have gone through some stuff. My parents are in their 70s. And like, well, would you want to take that to grandma and grandpa or Nana and Papa when you see them? What about, you know, what if mommy and daddy got sick? We don't want to give it to you. We wouldn't want to get it from you. And I mean, all along the way, they've been rock stars. They've been champions. That gives me a lot of hope that they will come through this just fine. Educationally, I know there'll be kids with gaps. They're going to be anyways, and it might be expounded upon more than we thought it would be. But kids are resilient, and from my experience with my own children and just the ones I've seen, and my wife is a teacher, seeing the students that she works with, like, overall, I think these students and these children are just going to come out of this probably strong. My hope is stronger than ever, just from what they've dealt with. But, you know, only time will tell, but I'm hopeful and optimistic.
Eugene, I'm going to go to you. Talk about how your kids took this news and how they responded and your early conversations with them as this pandemic bloomed.
Similar to the other stories here, it's the hardest thing for them at first was just being at school and then not. Zero transition. It was simply, I'm playing with my friends, I'm seeing my teachers. They both love their teachers. My little one especially, Lily, she's very emotional. So the fact that it stopped so abruptly and she couldn't say goodbye to her teacher, she was in tears. It was just a, Red Apple is kind of a big, one big family, so to speak. So that was very hard for them. The friends, it was hard, but it was easier because they, through their technology, they were already kind of used to video calling each other, maybe not as much as they do now, but sharing in games online and talking to each other after school and such. But it was huge not being able to see their teachers, not being able to go back to school. The disruption of their routine was very hard for them. They have been home, like all the other kids, since March, but so have I. I've been home since March 19th. I have a salary job. I work with CNH here in Racine. So I've been working from home. My wife she recently went back to work. She's a teacher in Kenosha, KUSD. So she's back. So it helped having someone here. It helped. We don't watch a lot of news because unfortunately lately it's hard to find, you know, something good out of it. So, they don't really have a huge knowledge, I guess, of the whole COVID thing. They understand it's a bad thing. They understand people are dying. They know the safety issues. We've made it easier for them by getting them masks that they like. We're a big Disney family, so they both got their Disney masks. My little one loves her kitties, and my older one, she's really into the Jack Skellington, stuff like that. But basically, we try to make it I can't say fun. We're not making this fun, but we're making their life as fun as we can. We're trying to make the best of it, and they know it's a big deal. They know to stay away from people. They know that we can't just go to playgrounds. We can't just go to stores. I mean, we can, but it's rare. We don't go out much, only when needed. And they are very resilient, though, at the same time. So they have adjusted quite well. The school, through technology, it was not the greatest when it first started, but no one was prepared, you know, so it was a little different then. Now we've been in the swing of things, and besides keeping them a little more motivated at their virtual learning, this has gone a lot better than I thought it would. And it has, I hate to say the cliche, it's the new normal. I hate hearing that, but that's, for them, that is the new thing now. And they know they get up, they have a little bit of time in the morning, and then they're getting on the computer doing their school. But we're getting by. There's not a lot of despair in the house. We try to keep a happy house, and if they have any questions, we're here for them. But for now, we're just getting by, like everyone else for the time being.
Great. I'm going to target this question to Kathy, and then we'll move across here. Wow, we're almost halfway through the program. Wow, this has been Education Matters. I'm Troy McDonald. We are talking today to families who have had their worlds changed due to virtual learning in some way or another. I am Troy McDonald. Let's go to you, Kathy, with this question. Have you had a newfound respect for teachers and for instructors during this? Walk us through a typical day and kind of the technology that's being used by your children as they go online?
I've been very fortunate. I actually have a degree in education, early childhood. So I used to work with 3 to 5 year olds previously before I had my son. So I kind of, that's like my prime age. I love that age so much for teaching. Unfortunately, I don't teach anymore, but I definitely have always respected teachers. It's really hard to go from one way of teaching and then having to change it. I mean, it's different if you're talking about a topic, but you're having to teach virtually. I myself was a very hyper kid when I was younger, and I was very active. I wanted to get up, do stuff. So those children that are more hyperactive, like me and my child, I know how to cope with it, but there's a lot of kids and parents that can't recognize that or don't recognize that. So I just respect what teachers are doing right now. It's hard trying to get that one-on-one time in a classroom. It's physical. You can see when kids need help. But what about those kids that aren't answering questions or asking questions? Those kids that need help. So I give those teachers a round of applause because they're doing a lot. They're doing the most that they can do right now. They're trying, and it's just something so new for them that no one would be able to prepare for what's happening. At Red Apple, since my son is so little, we have yet to get the laptops. So he's actually using my personal one. And in the morning time, I'll turn on one laptop, which is mine, and then I'll turn on his after him and my daughter get ready in the morning. My daughter just usually, I usually set up stuff for my daughter to do all day while we're on the computers. And then throughout my my son's teacher's videos, I'll pause it. Let's take a break. Let's go get breakfast. Let's go get another snack. I ask him a lot, do you understand that? Because, you know, when he starts getting antsy and moving around, I can recognize that, okay, something, I need to ask him something or, you know. So the technology-wise, it's good because I can pause, start. His teacher, his kindergarten teacher has been amazing, super reliable, easy to contact. When videos links don't work, she's able to just access it right away, the problem. She'll resend emails. We've been very fortunate with the teacher Cal has. So it's been going good so far. I haven't used the laptops or the tablets yet, but we're supposed to be picking it up within the week or so.
Wow. I'm going to move on to Stefan. Stefan, how are you dealing with the technology and almost being in that role of maybe a teacher's assistant, teacher's aide, or head teacher, depending on your experience? So talk about that.
Well, I was a teacher for 12 years. I worked primarily with children with special needs, and I worked in early childhood, Kathy, for our Head Start program. So I felt like I was pretty much prepared. One thing I do want to add that's added an additional layer for us is that my daughter Macy goes back and forth between her mom and I. We share time. And one of the more difficult aspects of that is that schools have not been prepared for helping us when there's a child who participates in school in two households. You know, we have equipment, we have information, and in the beginning, we really had to work with the school to bring this to their attention. Hey, you know, you got to include both parents on email. You have to give us all the same resources. And what I didn't say before was that I ended up getting COVID, that was a really hard time for my daughter because she, fortunately, I had enough foresight to not allow my daughter to come over until we got the test results. And when I tested positive, we had to isolate and quarantine. And that was a real difficult time because we could only communicate by phone. in trying to be reassuring, even though I wasn't reassured myself of what was going on. That was pretty, that was the worst piece of that. That time in school, I really, what I found the teachers able to do was to be calm. And really, nothing seemed to, it was like they'd been through this all before. And they called on resources that I didn't even think about. And as a matter of fact, just before this show, my daughter had her first virtual violin lesson. Mr. Anderson at Jefferson set it all up, knowing I don't care for Google, and he's working towards including my daughter's mom so that we can all participate with that same sense of inclusion, which has been difficult. We're all computer people here. I have my own home business. I'm a photographer, and we have an office. But Macy in the beginning said she was going to set up her school in my office, and that lasted about 15 minutes because I got the obnoxious tag, and I was told that I was not allowed back in her classroom for a long time. I think Unified has done a great job where I'm concerned in really being forward thinking and anticipating needs of families and children. Just the fact that any child, any family can go and get food, I think that's stellar. I think that shows Unified's commitment to being a force for support in the community. And there's a whole new generation of people that I see that were doing okay financially before COVID, but now because I work in subsidy programs, we're seeing a whole new swath of society that we're doing okay financially, and now they're in a situation of need that they've never been in before. So simply the school being able to provide this basis, this baseline of support, I think has been so important. But I guess my daughter misses her friends most, and she just misses the interaction. But I just told her teacher the other day, the biggest change in her is that when she was in school in person, she was kind of shy and she didn't really step out of herself too much. Virtually, she's a card, and now she has a lot more confidence. She's really comfortable with technology, because I found myself having to ask her, can you show me how you got there again so that I can go back and take a look? And the other thing is that she wants to be independent. And in years past, we've always had the planners, right? You look at what they did every day, you sign off, but we don't have that anymore. So my daughter took that as a sign that I did not need to be on top of her homework. She would let me know if she's having trouble, and her teacher would communicate to me if anything was missing. So she prefers a hands-off approach, and that's hard for me.
Yeah, and Stefan, I want to jump in. And first of all, I want to say good that you're here and that you've gotten through COVID, and I want to move on to Phil here. But I just want to ask if you're experiencing any symptoms after the fact, if you're having long-term things from COVID, and how you're doing right now before we move on to Phil.
I'm doing great. I was pretty much asymptomatic. I have a lot of allergies, so I had a headache that I thought was a sinus headache because I have a lot of allergies for about 2 days, and then it went away. My son delivers pizza, and he went on a trip with a couple of his friends, a camping trip out to Utah. And when he came back, we thought, you know what? Because of your job, because of your contact, we're going to go get tested. And we went, got tested. I tested positive, and he tested negative and has continued to test negative. So, the piece that we shook our heads at the most was, we did everything we were told to do. We sanitized, we wore masks, we didn't go anywhere we had to do. I didn't take the kids with me shopping. We you know, we used delivery service. So I believe that I was fortunate that I had a very mild case, and that I really have empathy for the hundreds of thousands of people that weren't so lucky.
Phil, let's move on to you and kind of what your daily schedule looks like and dealing with technology. You said your background is in educational technology, so it probably wasn't that big of a stretch for you.
I probably came into it a little more cocky than I should have been. So like Kathy and Stefan before me, I was a teacher for a while. I just spent some time teaching, and like Stefan actually spent some time working for DCF. So a connection there, but worked as a teacher, work in educational technology today. So I was like, I've got this. And then, now I have all three kids working at the same time in 4K kindergarten and second grade. And I was like, all right, since they're asynchronous at the moment, let's split this up. So I'd start with one, work through most of the stuff, start with the, and then eventually get my four-year-old son into something, some sort of routine, get him on the tablet. So tech issues weren't a big, like, okay, let's figure out the best way to differentiate, get them focused on where they need to be. I am looking forward to synchronous learning starting in a little bit over a week. But I think that'll be another interesting challenge, just myself working still, and is our internet going to handle it? What's that going to look like?
I just want to jump in, because for some people, they might not even know. So asynchronous means that these are preloaded classes that you can access at any time. And synchronous means you have to have your butt in the chair at the exact moment that class is happening.
Yes. Yep. Thank you. So just thinking about that now, okay, 8 o'clock, if all three start at 8, what is that going to look like? If I have a 9 o'clock Zoom meeting, are we going to crash my network? What's going on? We've already seen a little bit of slowness just when they're all watching their preloaded videos that are in their Google Classroom. So that's probably where, like, from a tech side, I'm coming at. But then too, to kind of get to the first question you started with, Kathy, just about like the respect for it. Again, I was like, oh, you know what? I have so much respect for teachers. I was one, even though I've been out of the classroom for a few minutes, but my respect just grew even more just thinking about tech issues, the differentiation between the three students. I'm like, I have three. How did I ever do a 30 in a classroom when I was teaching like fourth and fifth grade? And my wife is currently a teacher as well, in Racine Unified, but just going thinking like, man, how are we going to make this work? But we will, because like I said before, the kids are resilient and they're great. And, I'll make it through too, because I'm too stubborn not to. So I'm kind of looking forward to the change in a little bit over a week and kind of see where that takes us on this next chapter.
And Eugene, same question to you. How has your schedule changed? How are you dealing with the technology issues with your kids?
The schedule didn't change a whole lot for me personally. I've been working from home since March. The major change is now I'm on the couch, so I can be close to the kids. I'm rethinking that choice now, though. I get distracted just like they do, but in the beginning, their schedule from the beginning has been, they log on at 7:55 a.m. They check to see if their link is up in Google Classroom. And I don't have it memorized, but they each do have a couple breaks. There's some brain breaks. There's a little stretch break. And then lunch, of course. Then they have time from 1:40 to 3 where they're not actually virtually face-to-face. They are doing whatever homework assignments they may have or whatever lessons had been given to them by the teacher. But the schedule the technology at first, the first day, maybe into the second day, halfway or so, was horrible. I thought, wow, how are we going to do this? You know, we have good internet here. I've had zero issue as far as connecting. I connect through a VPN for my job, and I've had zero issues that during the summer when they were both on technology, watching a YouTube video or something, there was never any hiccups. So I'm not sure where the problem came from, but they went away. Either somebody fixed it with RUSD or it was just a glitch. But from then on, the technology has been fairly okay. I have my one daughter, she will have some drop calls here and there. It's just how technology works. On the whole, though, it's been great. I see that the school is doing everything they can. They're doing an excellent job. They are actually scheduling meetings one-on-one with the kids to learn a little more about them, something they would have been able to do, you know, in school, but they can't. But my kids have not complained, like, as far as, you know, wow, I don't like this. You know, they didn't care for it at first, but it was a huge change. And they're used to it now. They get excited. They get up in the morning and they wait for the link to pop up so they can click on it. They enjoy, I see them, I'll be working out here and I see them run out and, well, what are you doing? Well, part of like gym class, which I always thought, how can you have gym class virtually? Well, they make the kids run and let's say grab something round or find something with the first initial of your name on it, you know? So they're very excited. They're very engaged and they come running and it's good to see. I'm glad that they have adapted. It's still not normal for them, but it is the normal right now. And you know, it's falling into the same categories it was before of every now and then, oh, I don't want to go to school. Well, it's not because it's virtual. It's just because it's school and sometimes they don't want to go. But I think schedule-wise, I mean, I wish that they would want fewer snacks. You think that they have bottomless pits for stomachs. But other than that, I mean, it's me forgetting every day practically that, oh, yeah, I need to make lunch, you know, so it's no longer, it used to be me packing lunches early in the morning before I went to work and they'd have their lunch. And now it's, hey, we're hungry. And I'm like, oh, shoot, you know, I've got to get myself up. And of course, as a lot of children are, they're picky. So, you know, it's trying to vary up the routine at Shea Dad's here is kind of hard. But I think they've adapted. The poor kids have to deal with me all day with their mom working. I'm working too, but they're stuck with me at home. So. But the schedule's good. They are done, like I said, at 1:40. Sometimes I have to remind them that they have their asynchronous time. It's not school's over. It's you're no longer on video, but it's time to do your assignments. Sometimes they have some. Sometimes they've already completed them. So it's it has worked out. And like I said, I applaud RUSD. They've done a phenomenal job in taking the hardship that has come and turning it into something good. And we're dealing with it. They're making the best of it. And zero complaints from us.
What do you hope your kids say about you and your husband, your family during this time?
That's a good question. I think the best thing, I think just from the whole thing, I'm hoping that, you know, he learns a lot and that he knows that family is important and so is education.
Stefan, how about you? What do you hope your kids will say about you in 10 to 15 years?
Well, I think the word that we've talked about a lot is resilience. I hope that they remember this time as a time that we spent hours and hours together, but we really didn't have any grist because of it. And I hope that I think what I've seen them learn is that learning looks different, can be very different than one way. And I hope that we've taken thousands of pictures and we've snuck out to River Bend when nobody else was out there. And I just hope that they think about it as a time of resilience and not reaction. That we work together and we recognize those people that were supportive of us and we tried to be supportive of them. One thing I do want to add is that I come to this situation from a place of privilege and I'm always worried about those individuals, those families that don't have the resources that I do. I don't want this to be that to be forgotten. So I'm hoping that communities and the government comes together to really address the special needs of people that don't have resources. But I hope that, you know, they just remember it as a time that they learned from, and we really became more resilient.
Philip, what do you